The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Good morning, happy Friday. This is Football Social Daily. Daily Premier League news and opinion wrapped up in a 45-minute podcast from the Sports Social team. As we get ready for the weekend, we're going to be talking about the men in the dugout on today's show, as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer prepares for the long, lonely walk to the glue factory. What should we be making of Brendan Rodgers' press conference comments this week? Distancing himself from the job and accusing the reporter who asked him about it of being disrespectful for even asking the question. Should we be reading anything into Brendan Rodgers' comments? Plus, there are three new men in three new jobs going into the weekend. Dean Smith, Steven Gerrard and Eddie Howe are all going to be hoping for a new manager bounce in their jobs, but will any of them be getting it? We're also going to be talking transfers as contract talks between Jesse Lingard and Manchester United break down, and all the signs start pointing to a January departure for the former England midfielder, or current England midfielder, depending on who you ask. Plus, we're going to be delving deep into our mailbag and answering some listener questions at the end of today's podcast that have come into Sports Social Towers. None actually coming by mail, obviously, because that would just be weird. To do all that, I'm Jim Salverson. With me on the podcast, we've got the Declan Rice of Sports Social. Young, keen, surprisingly tall, Joel Tudor. How are you doing, Joel?
Good morning. I'm good, thanks. Great description, by the way.
Yeah. Marley's bracing himself for his now, because Marley is clearly the Mark Noble of Sports Social. Dependable, reliable, always there, but there's probably better options. How are you doing, Marley? You okay?
Oh, that stings. Oh, Jesus Christ, that's a harsh intro, that, you know. I knew I was in trouble when you described Joel as young, and I thought, Christ, I'm older than Joel. Especially as on, I think it was Wednesday when we were in the office, there was a joke that Joel made about something like 1985, and he went, "Oh, that was the year Marley was born." And I was like,
"I didn't say it was when you were born. I said it was when you were 15."
Oh, Jesus! Stop talking about that. See, like, I've been making that joke about my slightly older friends for years because I'm the youngest one, and now it's gone full circle, and it brought me down to earth with a crash. Like, Christ, I'm the older one in this office now. But then you get Jim at like mid-40s.
Well, mid-40s. Oh, so I have been feeling my age this week purely because I clocked that Steven Gerrard is younger than me and he's now a football manager. And it's like when you start spotting policemen are getting a little bit younger, or like my kids' teachers are younger than me. It's that kind of feeling when the players that you grew up being the same age as take that step into management. That's a real reminder of your impending death. Anyway, let's move on. We're going to start talking about Steven Gerrard and co, because we're going to kick off today's podcast with a conversation about the bosses in the Premier League, because there's a few stories of interest. First off, Brendan Rodgers. He's been playing down links with a potential move to Manchester United this week. In his pre-match press conference for Leicester City, he was questioned by a reporter about the rumours linking him with the job at Manchester United. And he was quite cutting in his reply. He said, it's disrespectful to talk about a job that currently has a manager in it. He said the normal stuff about being committed to Leicester City and wanting to stay and complete the project there. But did we expect him to say anything else, Marley? That's what happens when a manager's in a job and they haven't been given a formal offer elsewhere. They're only going to say, I'm committed. I don't want to talk about it at this stage, aren't they?
Yeah, I suppose they are, yeah. But I do think it's a bit disrespectful at the same time, because I don't think there's any real chance of Rodgers leaving halfway through a season. I don't think, like, we've come out of this international break, and if Solskjaer was going to get sacked, it would have happened already. Like, it's fair play to ask him. It's not fair play, but it's more understandable to ask him if there was a job available. But it's double disrespectful to Leicester to link their manager with another job, and then it's even more disrespectful to Man United and Solskjaer to link Rodgers with a job that isn't even available. So I can understand why he said he was a bit annoyed about it. And fair play to him, because I don't see, like, it's just a stirring question. It's just trying to stir something up, and that's what media does now. You see, you know, when there's a press conference every week, there's 30 journalists in the room, and 20 of them are trying to trip you up and sell papers off the back of it, and just purely because their job is all online clickbait and paper stuff now. So I seen his point. I thought it was quite disrespectful.
Given the departure that he had from Celtic, though, Brendan Rodgers, that is, Marley, surely he kind of, he doesn't bring it on himself, that type of questions, but it's very rich for him to start questioning the respect aspect of that question.
Yeah, but Leicester didn't have a manager when he left Celtic. They'd sacked Puel, hadn't they? And it was an obvious sort of, I suppose, yeah, it's an obvious step up, but maybe Man United is as well for him. But it's a different situation because Man United have a manager, and they're clearly not going to sack him. So, like, well, not going to sack him at the minute. Like, they've got Watford at the weekend, they'll probably win that, and Man United fans will lurch from being, oh, it's all doom and gloom, to, well, we might actually get the top four or the top six. So it's, I understand where he's coming from, really.
What do you think about the prospect of Brendan Rodgers at Manchester United, Joel? As a Red, do you think he's the type of manager that would do a job at United? Is he the kind of guy that you'd like to see come in and take charge if Solskjaer does depart?
I've been really 50-50 about this, because out of all of the managers that we've been linked with, he's probably the most credible one, just in terms of how much he's actually won when you compare him to, say, like Ten Hag or Pochettino or whoever else we've been linked with. I mean, he's probably the only one really who's got the best CV out of the lot of them. For me, I don't know. I'm trying to understand whether it's the right choice in terms of how we progress. But when you look at how he's been at his other clubs, I mean, he's kind of elevated every single side he's been at. When he was at Swansea, they played amazing football. When he was at Liverpool, they did that surprise title challenge. And I just want to mention that they lost it on the final days. And obviously then he went to, you know, Celtic, did the undefeated season. And now obviously at Leicester, they've won an FA Cup under him. They're kind of always constantly going for top four. So every single club he's been at, he's always left a mark on them. Although he's never crossed the line when it comes to the Premier League. But then saying that, he's won an FA Cup with the resources he's got at Leicester is a really good achievement. I just don't know whether the step up to United is the right one for us. I feel like United are so desperate to replicate that Alex Ferguson era of having a British manager for the next 10 years, and it's all nice and longevity, and football doesn't work like that anymore. We're kind of in an era now where you have to expect a manager to just be hanging around for 2-4 years max, and then you just reshuffle the pack again and go again. But I'm just not sure. When you go through that press conference, the thing that kind of strikes me is that everyone always really protects managers when, you know, the job's on the line. They're probably as protected as goalkeepers are on the pitch. But then when a player is on the verge of, you know, wanting to be sold, or he's playing bad on the pitch, every single person, without hesitation, is effectively saying they should be sacked. It's not like a manager, when he's sacked, can't get another job, or he's going to be, you know, trying to make up his rent money at the end of the week. He's getting well compensated for that job. Even sometimes it's a bad job. I mean, look at Santo from Tottenham. He's only there for 4 months, and he's probably getting like a 4 or 5 million payout. So I just don't understand the kind of like taboo around managers being sacked. But for me, I would personally go for Pochettino. That's just a preference. But I mean, we're beggars can't be choosers right now. We're not in the position to kind of be going for the top manager.
I think you're right. I think managers should expect these questions. I think Brendan Rodgers is the type of character that seems to almost caught this attention as well. And you think of the jobs he's been linked with already this season. He was linked with the Spurs job. He's been linked with Manchester City when eventually Pep Guardiola leaves. Now he's linked with Manchester United. Leicester City have been underperforming this season, Marley. I think we all expected them to do better 11 games in. Do you think any of their form has been affected by potentially Brendan Rodgers having his head turned slightly about the prospect of these inverted commas big jobs?
No, I'm not sure about that. But at the same time, I don't really know what's Leicester's issue. Maybe they're struggling with the 2 games a week thing with the Europa League sort of kicking in and stuff. And they've had a couple of injuries here and there as well. The defence has never really been settled. Fofana's a big loss for them. Johnny Evans is massive as well. And Soyuncu's played below the sort of standard he did last season. So I think it's more that than anything. I'm not comfortable with this Brendan Rodgers talk. If it does start to seep into Leicester's season and results, like, I don't want to see Leicester slip off the, you know, like lose 2 of the next 3, for example, on the back of this Rodgers speculation, because I don't think anyone deserves it. I don't think Leicester deserve it. I don't think Brendan Rodgers deserve it, because they've done everything properly. I don't know how many times we've praised Leicester over the last couple of years about how they're well run and how they're doing everything right and living within their means and signing well and all that. So to have it sort of derailed by some stupid speculation about a job he probably won't even get in future is not the way I want to see it to go, really.
Let's move on and talk about other managerial issues, because as we've said, Solskjaer is still in the job at Manchester United. There is no vacancy there yet. We'll see what happens at Watford at the weekend. But there are 3 new bosses in charge of their first games in the Premier League this weekend. Howe at Newcastle, Smith and Norwich, and Steven Gerrard at Aston Villa. Who do you expect is going to get off to the best start of their tenure? I guess the advantage, I was thinking about this over the weekend, and why you get the new manager bounce. Half of the new manager bounce comes from teams not being able to assess what you're going to do properly, because the Newcastle United's opposition this weekend can't sit down and look at what Eddie Howe has done in previous games with Newcastle. So there's an element of surprise that I think works for them. It's like a new team coming into the league. But who out of those 3, Joel, out of Howe, Smith, Gerrard, do you expect to make an immediate impact?
I think very, very short term, I would definitely say Howe with Newcastle, just because if you look at all 3 fixtures for the new managers this weekend, I'd say Newcastle is definitely the most favourable. Going into the game against Brentford, where I think they're 3 on the bounce, successive defeats at the moment. At home, I think the Newcastle fans are just kind of breathing a breath of fresh air after Bruce has been sacked, and kind of everything's looking a little bit more rosy than they were, say, 3 weeks ago. So I think that'll be the most favourable fixture, because obviously Aston Villa are at home to Brighton. I think Brighton have had they've had 1 win in the last 6 games, but they've only lost once in those 6 games, so they're still a really tough opposition. And Norwich, I just don't have any hope for them whatsoever, I'm sorry. So he's going to have a tough task against Southampton at home. But I think, yeah, Newcastle will be the one where they'll get their first win of the season for sure. And I think it'll be onwards and upwards from there, you would think. But of course, Newcastle, you can't underestimate how bad they've been as well. It doesn't just change overnight. But it's a good point that you make, Jim, actually. I think opposition side, when new managers come in, they often always bring in kind of the outcast players who were not playing for 2-3 months, and suddenly they're in the side again, since everyone's on a clean slate. So it must be difficult to prepare against a team who are literally choosing from a squad of 22 rather than a typical 13, 14 players that you would think are going to get selected. So, yeah, it'll be music to Marley's ears, but I'm going Newcastle this weekend.
I'm not sure you're going to be too sympathetic when I ask this question, Marley, but I found it a little bit distasteful, some of the comments that have come out of Newcastle over the last couple of weeks. And we've all seen the pictures of training and how Eddie Howe's been heralded as a genius for actually turning up to training in the morning rather than going off on holiday during an international break. But things like Callum Wilson appearing in the local press up in Newcastle and saying that training had a new intensity and the players were fitter than before. Is it unfair on Steve Bruce to suggest...
No.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that the players were unfit under Steve Bruce, weren't they? It wasn't like he wasn't there training them at some point.
Well, that's the thing. It kind of was at times. I understand where you're coming from with this like, you know, thing about Wilson talking and saying that training's been... had a new dynamic, and Fabian Scher said something similar. He said, I've only been around for two sessions, but all the lads are saying it's been amazing since I've been away with Switzerland. But on the flip side of what you said, you know, you have to say something nice about the new guy, don't you? Like, because he's a manager. So you can't say, you know, it was great under Bruce and it's equally great under Eddie Howe. You know, you're always going to say something that might get you picked on a Saturday. So there's that angle to it, and there's also the angle that it just is from what everybody said. You know, Eddie Howe's training sessions are incredibly meticulous and planned and regimed and all the rest of it, and it'll be a huge sort of culture shock to the squad that have got used to 2.5 years of Bruce's training methods, which were distinctly lacking. And you see, I'm always a fan of seeing what ex-players say. And there's been pieces during the international break on everyone, from Bruce to Howe. I've heard nothing but good things about what Eddie Howe's training's like and what his approach is like and his professionalism and all the rest of it. And then I always think back to that quote from Richie Delatt when he was at Aston Villa that said Steve Bruce used to just come into training and it was like an under-9 session where he'd just throw a ball in and say, right, let's play. And that just, like, it just sticks in my head of, like, what a difference the squad is going through now. And hopefully we'll see the fruits of the labour on Saturday, because, you know, you can't ask for an easier game, I don't think, on paper than a team that has been promoted recently and has lost the last 4 games at home after an international break when we've got an entirely fit squad with the exception of one player.
I think Steven Gerrard's going to have a real impact at Aston Villa. I think you look at the squads between Newcastle, Aston Villa and Norwich City, and it's unquestionable that Aston Villa have got the best squad and the best first 11 there, and they just need to be set up the right way, and they just seem to need a little bit of motivation as well. And I think there is a certain power in just being Steven Gerrard, being England's Steven Gerrard, one of the best midfielders that ever played for England, because there's going to be players in that dressing room. Everyone knows what it's like when you just want to impress the guy, don't you? You want to impress the guy who's one of the great footballers and show him that you're a good footballer as well. And I think that's going to have an instant impact at Aston Villa. But Steven Gerrard's been saying that it's unfair to call his new role at Aston Villa a stepping stone. It's not a move before he gets the Liverpool job. But do we believe that, Joel? Is there any question that Steven Gerrard hasn't got his eyes on that Liverpool job when Jurgen Klopp leaves? The contracts at Aston Villa end at the same time as Jurgen Klopp's contracts at Liverpool. That's a sign in itself, isn't it?
No, I don't think that's the case. I don't think he's thought Jurgen Klopp's going at that time, so let me just get out of my contract nice and sneaky. to be honest, I think everyone, including Gerrard, needs to realise that, I think they do realise, especially Gerrard, that you can't overlook this job. It's still a really difficult job to come into, because the Scottish League is a different kettle of fish compared to the Premier League. I mean, when you're the manager of Rangers or the manager of Celtic, you're always going to be fighting for the title no matter what. Whereas when you come into the Premier League, you know, it is quite unforgiving for managers, where you don't necessarily get a hell of a lot of time. There's not a lot of patience because there's so much money at stake every single season. But like you said, Jim, and I said that in the podcast last week, he's got such a good squad to go off on the back of 100 million that they received from Grealish. They've got owners that back him and will back him definitely next summer to make the squad his own. And he's got some really top quality players. I mean, testament to Dean Smith, because his recruitment was really good. It was just the fact that they were getting so many injuries, and it just seemed like the defensive structure just went to complete mess. But you've got Danny Ings and Buendia and Bailey, who's been injured for a long time. They've barely even had first team football, really. So when he can get all of these players back, I think they'll be firing again. But it depends on what you call Gerrard's job a success. I mean, if he continues to just like keep him a established top 8 side, top 7 side potentially, like, does that equate to being ready for the Liverpool job? I don't really know, because obviously going from Villa to Liverpool and it being expected to challenge for the title every single season, do well in Europe every single season, that again is another kettle of fish that you need to deal with. So for me, and like I said before, Jurgen Klopp may not even leave Liverpool for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Even he said himself, he just doesn't know. It's only when Liverpool want to move him on, and judging by how well they're doing, I don't think they'll want him to leave anytime soon. So no, I don't think it's a case of him kind of using it as a stepping stone, because it's a big stepping stone that he needs to cross, and I don't think you can overlook a job like that.
I guess every job in a certain respect is a stepping stone, in terms of football management particularly. Unless you're at one of the big clubs, unless you're at Real Madrid or Barcelona or maybe even Man City, it's like every job is leading to that point at some point. All those managers will be hoping to have a little bit of cash to spend this January. Some of them need a little bit of cash to spend this January, and we'll talk about some of those potential transfers and Jesse Lingard's future next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily, talking transfers and talking Jesse Lingard, because the contract talks between Lingard and Manchester United over the last 24 hours have reportedly broken down. Jesse is out of contract this coming summer, meaning in the summer he can leave on a free transfer, or potentially he could be off elsewhere in January. You're a Manchester United fan, Joel, as we've already mentioned. Do you think Jesse Lingard's got a right to feel let down here? Because it looked like he was on the cusp of moving over the summer, but Solskjaer swept in, blocked the move and promised him game time. And then now he's hardly had a look in on the Manchester United pitch. So he's going to feel a little bit upset that those promises haven't been fulfilled, isn't he?
It's the strangest scenario I think I've seen in such a long time, where there's errors on both sides completely. I mean, when you look at Lingard's side, he just come off the back of an amazing, 6 months with West Ham, where he got back into the England setup, obviously just missed out on the Euros. But he was in unreal form, where he was getting like Player of the Month awards. He scored some vital goals for you guys, where he nearly helped to fire you into the top four. And then suddenly, the summer came, and this is the error on the United side. He has 1 year left on his contract. They have probably a 20 million-ish offer ready from West Ham if they want it. I think even David Moyes confirmed that as well. But he just said that United just weren't listening to any offers. So obviously Lingard has been told by Solskjaer, you're part of our plans. You're going to have good game time. Like, don't worry, we're going to discuss a contract. And obviously he's believed that, because, I mean, if you're getting told that by Manchester United, of course you're going to think, all right, I want to get back into the side again. But as we've seen this season at United, Solskjaer has his favourites, and he seems very, very reluctant to change the side, despite the side that he keeps picking, not letting him down constantly. And now we find ourselves in a situation where we're going to end up losing him on a free. Lingard's realised he's not getting any game time whatsoever. His World Cup place is at a cost massively if he doesn't get any game time soon. And I just think it just shows how poorly run United are at the moment, where they had an asset that they could have literally just got 20 million for, who's played, I don't even think he's played a full match at United so far this season. I mean, how poorly run of a club can you be? And now West Ham are going to be absolutely laughing in January, because they could leave it until, say, January the 31st, and say to United, okay, we're prepared to pay you $4 million for him, and if you don't take it, we're just going to get him on a pre-contract, and the club can do nothing about it now, so we're not in power anymore. But I think for Lingard, I think it was bemusing how he never chose to leave in the summer, because now when you look at West Ham, he's probably looking at West Ham this season and thinking, I could have been part of that. Like, I helped get them into Europe again. I helped that league position. And now he finds himself on the bench. He's going to need to find his form again. And I think it's best for all parties if he leaves in the January. And I feel for him because he made a really good impact. He scored the winning goal at West Ham, if you remember, Jim.
Yes, I do. And thanks.
He's an impact player. And I think he deserves more than that. But Solskjaer's just so set in his ways. Trusts the wrong players constantly. And yeah, he's clearly giving him false advice on how he thought the season was going to go for him, and clearly it's not worked out the best for both parties. But it's just so poorly run on United's behalf, it annoys me.
It is interesting that Jesse Lingard's brother, who is also his agent, has been publicly flirting with West Ham over the last couple of months. He's been liking Instagram posts, commenting COYI on posts and things like that, which suggests a move back to West Ham at some point. But there's a few options for Jesse Lingard here. One, you wait till the summer, you sign for whoever is interested in you, and you potentially get a really healthy signing bonus off the back of that, because the club isn't paying a fee. But there are clubs that could come in January, and you get that extra playing time as well. The clubs that could come in January, Marley, West Ham, obviously we've mentioned, Newcastle United have been linked previously. Apparently there's a few European teams who are already making inquiries, and I guess a fee of £10 million ish would probably be appropriate. Where do you think he should head off? Do you think he should go back to West Ham where he had that great season? Should he join Eddie Howe on the project at Newcastle? Or is he one of those players that he's so linked to Manchester United that potentially that clean break, going to Europe, to an Atletico Madrid perhaps, would be the best move for him?
I don't know where Atletico Madrid's come from, but I can't see him flourishing under Simeone.
Out of my ass. Just plucked it from nowhere.
I don't see the downside of going back to West Ham. I think they're proving right now that last season wasn't a fluke. They're doing really, really well. He could probably still get into that team. I don't think Vlasic has made much of an impact, who they seem to sign instead. When Lingard made it clear he was staying at Man United last summer, they went and signed Vlasic, didn't they? And he's barely played in the Premier League. So I would try and go back there if I was him. Obviously it depends on who comes in, like what options he's got on the table, but I could see him doing well at someone like Spurs, for example, being that one of the two supporters to Harry Kane alongside Heung-Min Son, if that materialises. But with, you know, there'll be options, because everyone knows that Lingard, if you go back 2 years and Lingard came up for sale, a lot of teams would be like, well, we don't know how good he is anymore, because he was potential, now he's quite old. And then now he's had that 6 months where he played out of his skin and got back into the England setup, and almost fired West Ham to the Champions League. So he's a lot more coveted now, and everybody knows that that player is still there. You've just got to unlock him and play him every week. Solskjaer hasn't done that. He's made a complete mess of the situation, like Joel said. So you're looking at a new start. I would be trying to go back to West Ham if I was him. You know you can do it there. There's never very many guarantees in football, but it's as, you know you flourish there. You know you get in the team. You know you can get on with the players and all the rest of it. You know what the atmosphere is like and all sorts.
You like the manager, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. It's all there. Like, it's a try before you buy. You've already tried it, so why not buy it?
Let's talk about some other potential Newcastle United recruits, because the Times have published a story today that is suggesting a load of players that are being linked with Newcastle United this January, and they're not the names that have previously been linked. There's not the... I mean, if you go to Newcastle this weekend, go to the game, you'll no doubt see Newcastle shirts all over the place with Mbappe and Messi on the back and stuff like that from fans getting overexcited. These players are slightly less impressive, and I'm going to struggle with most of their names. Netherlands defender Stefan de Vrij, Croatian midfielder Marcelo Bozovic from Inter Milan, and Thomas Strakosha, who is the Lazio goalkeeper, Albanian international. Are they the types of players that you expected to be coming into Newcastle, and do they improve the squad significantly enough?
They probably improve the squad. I've heard of Strakosha, that rumour for probably over a year now. I don't really know where it's come from, because goalkeeper is probably one of our strongest departments that doesn't need immediate work. I watched him in the game with England in Albania at last weekend, and he didn't exactly cover himself in glory, especially for Kane's, I think it was his second goal, didn't cover himself in glory at all, but you know, you can't judge him on one game. So it's one of them like rumours that is about right, because like Lazio aren't a title challenge inside. He probably will fancy a move and a new challenge and a bit more cash, let's be honest. It just depends who wants what with our goalkeeper situation, because we've got Darlow getting picked ahead of Dubravka at the minute, which is baffling. And then Dubravka, who is a quality goalkeeper, but 33, you know, are they looking at getting someone in a bit younger? I don't know. And as for the other two, I think you almost said Defridge, didn't you? Stefan De Vrij from, is it Inter he's at? He's been sort of one of the very solid high-level defenders for a while now, but I'm not entirely sure about his motivation to come to Newcastle other than a bit of cash. And it probably the same goes with Brozovic as well, because
that's any player though that you're going to sign this window, isn't it? It's largely going to be financially motivated.
Probably, yeah. It's just hard to understand, because like it's hard to say, well, that might happen, because you know, Newcastle haven't tried to sign players that are clearly better than what they've got for like 6-7 years, like probably going back to signing like Kabay and Demba Ba and Papi Cisse and people like that, because we've just signed crap for the last like 4 or 5 years, with the exception of Callum Wilson and Dubravka, and that's about it. So and St. Maximan as well, obviously, but yeah, it's hard to sort of sift through this, because we still don't know that like what we're gonna get, and that first sort of guy through the door is going to give much more of a sort of signal as to what supermarket we're shopping in. Is it, because it's not Aldi anymore, but is it Tesco or is it Waitrose? You know what I mean?
Speaking of supermarkets, a football magazine that in France that always, I think, sounds like a supermarket that sells feet, Foot Mercato, is reporting that Wesley Fofana is potentially interesting Chelsea and Manchester United. So the Leicester City defender plays for France under-21s. He's 20. He's been injured for much of this season. He's had a good time at Leicester City since he arrived. But are you surprised to see him linked with big clubs like Chelsea and Manchester United at this stage in his career, Joel?
No, not at all. Because if you cash your mind back to just before he got injured, I mean, he was one of the main reasons why they ended up winning the FA Cup, and why their defence was just so solid, and why they nearly got top four, just to be kind of nipped out in the last couple of weeks. But he's a top quality centre back. He'll probably end up becoming part of the French main setup as soon as he gets back to his full fitness. I'm always quite surprised when players who have really bad injuries continuously still get linked with moves, because nobody knows how he's going to actually react when he gets back. Obviously, he's still, what is he, 20, 21, so I'm sure he'll end up getting back to full fitness. But, you know, some injuries can really hinder players where they don't get to that same level that they got at just before they managed to actually get injured. But I think it's definitely justifiable that he's getting linked to all of these big clubs, because he was probably one of the best defenders in the league that season. And it just shows how good Leicester's recruitment are, in terms of they know how much they have to spend, but they spend wisely. They don't spend on these kind of mercenaries and players who are only coming for a payday. They have such a good network of, like, look at Daka, I think, who they got from Salzburg. These are just players who weren't really on the radar of all the big clubs, but they end up becoming really big players for Leicester. And the only issue with Leicester, and I think we go back to Brendan Rodgers, is that he's at a club where they're at the mercy of every other big club when it comes to their players. where if Fofana has a breakout season or if Dakar ends up becoming a 20-goal striker, they're powerless to them leaving because, you know, they are a bit of a stepping stone club when going to, you know, the likes of United, Chelsea, Liverpool, etc. So maybe, you know, that might be a tipping scale for Rodgers if his team starts to disband at the end of the season and he sees some of his best players leave. But no, for now, I think obviously it's a while away until Fofana will be thinking of leaving. I think he's just thinking of getting back onto the pitch and getting fully fit again and trying to get back to his form. But no, it's definitely justifiable, the clubs that are getting linked with him, because he's a top centre-back. I think everyone's just kind of forgotten about him a little bit just because he's been out for such a while.
We're going to finish off the Football Social Daily for today with answering a few of your questions, finishing off the week in style by delving into the mailbag. AQA next on the Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. Final bit of Friday before we head into the weekend's Premier League action. Don't forget there is a full preview of the Saturday and Sunday games with former professionals in the hot seat with the dugout. Niall and the boys will be here. In fact, I say former professionals. It's one former professional and Marley tomorrow. Francis Benali, former Southampton cult player. Niall's obviously hosting, and then we've got Marley as well for we had a late dropout, so Marley kind of stepped in. What's the highlight? What's the highest point of your footballing career, Marley?
Oh, what? As in, like, playing?
Yeah, just so we can compare. Francis Benali, Premier League footballer for Southampton, Marley Anderson.
Well, I scored 2 goals at Celtic Park in a charity game, so I scored more goals at Celtic Park than Francis Benali did in his Premier League career because he only got one. So stick that up your franny.
Did you mention that to him on the show?
No, I didn't. He's honestly the nicest man in the world.
He is. He's lovely. And you can hear that show, the preview for the weekend's action. It'll be out later tonight. The dugout on this feed, on the Football Social Daily feed. Let's get stuck into some questions, though. I want to cover this first one quickly because it could take us ages to go through it if we argue every single selection. And I'm going to stay out of it as well. I'm not going to make my selection. It's coming from Dave via Twitter. He says, which Premier League players would you have in your five-a-side team, past and present? We're going to keep it to the present. So current Premier League players that would make up your perfect five-a-side team, Joel.
Right, so my philosophy is just I'm dominating possession, so we're not having a keeper. We're just going to go one goal and switch. right, so my first player is...
Sure, I mean, I said I was going to keep out of it, but Edison, you're having Edison in goal, don't you?
No, we're switching.
Because Edison, not only a goalkeeper,
I'm dominating the game. We're just switching.
All right.
So we're going to have Kante, just because every five-a-side team needs a guy who's just going to run for the whole 90 minutes, however long you're playing. Then I'm going with Jorginho, just in front of him. Keep the possession. He's not losing the ball. Frustrates the other side. Bernardo Silva, because in my own experience, I absolutely hate playing against those small, nimble players who just keep body feinting you and tearing you around. Sancho, because he's a total street footballer. He knows how to do a couple nutmegs. You always need those players who can get the nutmegs going. And then if we're playing against Marley's five-a-side team, I'm going with Josh King up front.
Brilliant.
No particular reason.
I might have to put myself in just so I can clip him as he goes.
It's difficult to argue with those selections. You've fought through every single one, and I admire that. Marley, what have you got? So we've got, I'm going to judge the winner here. I think that's a good idea. So it's Joel's five-a-side team versus yours. I'm going to say, who have you got for facing up against Joel?
I was honestly going to just try and pick the five hardest players in the Premier League, but I'd end up with like half of Burnley's team and Sean Dyche as a sort of floating defensive midfielder. I'd stick Edison in goal because he fills a five-a-side goal with how tall he is, and he can also probably score from his own goal with his shot power. So go for Edison in goal. Well, Joel's picked Kante, so I can't really have Kante if we're playing against each other. So I'll go for someone else. I'll go for Declan Rice because you need an ugly bloke in midfield who's going to boot you if you go past him. So I'm having Declan Rice. I'm having Salah. I'm having Saint-Maximin. And I'm having... I'm not having Harry Kane because all he does is shoot from everywhere.
Oh, you hate those players who just go for goal every single time.
You don't want to play five-a-side with me, mate. That's all I do.
So that's why you scored two at Celtic Park.
Damn right. Who else could I have? How many have I named there? Four. I've got Rice, yep. Saint-Maximin, Salah, Edison. Oh, you got to have a goal scorer, aren't you? So I would go for... I'd go for Aubameyang, actually, because he's rapid. And on a five-a-side pitch, I feel like he's fast enough to be a real problem. So I'm going for them five.
Do you know what? Despite the fact that Marley has picked players that I think would just run out of space instantly, the second they'd set off on a sprint, that would be it. They'd be at the end of the pitch and they'd run out of space. Because you've got Declan Rice and a goalkeeper, I'm going to judge you the winner of that. I think your team is going to win. Even though I think Joel probably had the better team, to be honest with you. It was more thought out. You've got Declan Rice, so I can't argue with it. Very good. Good question, Dave. Thank you very much for that. Next question comes from Lauren, who says, after your discussion on the England golden generation earlier in the week, we were talking about them versus the current England squad, who was better, whether it was Gerrard and Scholes and Lampard or the current lot. She wants to know who has the best, open brackets, or least worst, close brackets, goalkeeper out of the two. So we're judging David James versus Jordan Pickford, which you'd probably argue was the weak spot for both those England teams. Who was better or who was not as bad, Joel?
Pickford by far was better than David James. Like, Pickford's the kind of player where for his club, he's so dodgy. But for England, he ends up becoming like Dino Zoff. He's just unreal. So I would definitely say Pickford. I mean, David James, my only recollection of him was the 2010 World Cup, and I swear to God he was awful. All I remember was Germany counter-attacking was in that was it the last 16 game or quarter-final, probably last 16, and he was just he looked like one of those pro clubs goalkeepers who were just out of position constantly. So yeah, I'd definitely go with Pickford. I think he's been unreal for England, especially in those penalty shootouts, which has always been our Achilles heel. So yeah, Pickford by an absolute mile for me.
Fair, Marley. I mean, you do have to separate the Jordan Pickford that plays for England and the Jordan Pickford that plays for Everton, because he has never let England down, I don't think. Would you agree with Joel's assessment?
Yeah, I'd agree with it on the basis that I always thought David James was a bit rubbish. Rather than Pickford being clearly amazing, yeah, I thought David James was... He always scared me when the ball came towards him, because I just didn't know. He'd sort of save the ones you didn't expect him to save and balls up the ones that you do expect him to save. And that always worried me as a goalkeeper. I'd rather have a solid keeper that's going to be a bit more predictable in what he might save and where he's strong and where he's weak. So I'd probably say Pickford. And as well, with his feet, he is a good player. He's got good distribution. Hell of a left foot on him. With his power, he can absolutely hammer it halfway down the field and, well, three quarters of the way down the field and get you right up into the opposition's half. So I'd probably plump for Pickford, even though he's got tiny arms.
My favourite David James fact is the fact he has a 28-inch waist, which is absolutely incredible. When you consider the size of his shoulders and how high...
I'm glad you said waist after that.
That's a different podcast.
What a
right, fact. Final question from Enliak, who's messaged us via Instagram with this one. What does the top half of the table look like at the end of the season, is the question. With teams like West Ham and Brighton overperforming, unfair, Leicester City, Manchester United not being at full speed, and the new managers coming in at Tottenham and Aston Villa, who do you realistically will think will get into the Champions League and Europa League next season? So we need a four and a two, basically. The four that are going to get into the Champions League and the two that are going to get into the Europa, Marley.
I would plump for Man City winning the league, and then Chelsea second, Liverpool third. They could change, actually. Spurs fourth.
So Tottenham getting back into it.
Yeah, with the Conte factor, yeah. Man United fifth and Leicester sixth. And West Ham seventh.
No Europa League place for West Ham. Joel, how do you think that looks?
No, you'll be in that little bot charity league at the end of the season.
I'd go with City winning it, Liverpool second, Chelsea third. Honestly, the fourth place is literally up for grabs for absolutely anyone this season, but I'd probably... I'm going to go with I'm going to go with West Ham. I'm just going to think that they might maintain it just because I don't think United are going to do anything to do it. I think United 5th, Arsenal 6th, Tottenham 7th.
It's both having Brighton dropping out. Only Joel picking Arsenal for a top 7 place. I don't think they're even in your top 7 there, Marley.
Who, Arsenal? No. No, they weren't. To be honest, I forgot about them. But now I'm thinking about them. I'm thinking about them. It's just a consistency with Arsenal. At their top level, they can beat anyone, and they can easily be one of the 6 best teams in the country, but you don't know whether it's going to last. Like, they're unbeaten since August, which is great, but would you back them to go... You wouldn't back against them going winless till January, because they have been all over the place in recent years, and, you know, they have got a chance, but that top 7, top 8 is looking very, very tight. The only thing I'm sure about is that Brighton won't be anywhere near it come the end of the season.
Incredibly competitive season at the top. You've both picked the wrong champions, though, because clearly Chelsea will win the Premier League this season. I've said it since day one. I stand by it. If Chelsea don't win the Premier League, whoever beats them will win the Premier League. It's first or second. Nailed on, I think, for Chelsea this year.
No, I think they're going to drop off. I can see it. I think City are going to be... They're going to be like one of those steam trains. They just start picking up steam, whereas Chelsea are going to end up losing it. I'm calling it now. Quote me on it.
There we go. We'll come back in, what, 25 games time? And we can work out who's correct. That is it for Football Social Daily for today. Don't forget you can get the latest news on your team at sport-social.co.uk. You can either listen to the latest news or you can read the latest news there. Our journalists are scouring the internet and the training grounds to find the latest gossip on what's going on at your club. You can also find the link there to the Sport Social Podcast Network, which has just clicked over 100 fan casts. So there are 100 podcasts to choose from. Well over 100 podcasts now. You can go and find any podcast on any sport you like. Go and check it out. There's loads of really great content on there. If you like your podcasts, go give them a listen. That is it for Football Social Daily today. Marley, Joel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Enjoy the weekend and good luck for your team.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.